On a very busy Wednesday, we have Diamondbacks. We're going to talk a little ASU. I'm going to make a comparison to for the Cardinals to another NFL team from a few years ago, and I'm not sure how much people are going to love it, but a lot going on. We're going to have Zach Gallen of the Diamondbacks joining us at the bottom of the hour, coming off of his start, start number two. As a Diamondback, he was part of that busy trade deadline coming over from Miami. Has been impressive so far. He's going to join us and talk about that transition, what he thinks of the club, and kind of what he's doing to get his feet under him early on in his career, changing teams midseason. What's that like? So we're going to be talking about that, as well as Brad talked to Ralph Amsden, Chili from the Arizona Varsity Squad. Those guys went in-depth on everything high school football, just a, 9 days away from 0 week, kicking things off for the Arizona high school football season. So we are going to hear from them on the couch talking all things high school football. Going to be a lot. It's usually entertaining and usually not short-winded when Ralph and Chili get together and debate what's going on in the high school football scene. But let's get to our rundown brought to you by Sagicor Now. Sagicor Now, protect what matters most. And first and foremost, let's give a quick update on our fearless leader. Had a double knee replacement yesterday, but by all accounts, everything went well. Was in contact with his wife throughout the day, kind of getting updates on what he's been up to, and by all accounts, sounds like everything went really well. The implants, the knee replacements fit perfectly, and he was pretty zonked out because of painkillers. So he is resting. I'm sure we're going to be hearing from him very soon, as well as seeing him in just a couple of weeks. So glad that went well. An uneventful day when it's a surgery day is always a good day. Devin Henry on the other side of the glass producing, because Eric's taken his 35th vacation this year.
Again.
But yes, again. Do you think we should be changing our Twitter password for Sports 360AZ while Brad is recovering and probably on pretty heavily sedated?
That's not a bad idea.
Yeah.
I kind of like that.
At least if you see incoherent tweets... I'm not going to say it's 100% Brad.
I mean, it could be me recovering. Just any other day.
I know. But. It could. Grammar's tough for us who are paid professionally to write and speak grammatically correct. So
it done tough.
Yeah. So, but glad he is doing well. I am hoping to see him in the next day or two. So I will provide more updates as I hear more and talk to him and that sort of thing. But sounds like everything went well, which is the good news. On the sports front, Arizona Diamondbacks got a win yesterday against the Colorado Rockies, 9-3 in Coors. Like I said, Zach Gallen's second start with the club. Went four innings, didn't go super deep into the ball game, around 95 pitches, gave up 9 hits, just 2 earned runs. And I think that's the important part here. The Diamondbacks jumped out to an early lead, a big lead, and when it's don't get cute, just throw strikes. And the Rockies are going to hit. We know that. We know that lineup with Arenado, Charlie Blackmon, Daniel Murphy, all those types of players. That's their bread and butter right now. But Gallen was able to go after guys, worked well with runners on, and was able to navigate out of some tough spots. They had a bases loaded situation, one out. Nolan Arenado is coming up to the plate. It was a sacrifice fly, struck out Murphy, and then they were out of it. You know, pretty minimum damage. And that's what you want to see, not only out of a young pitcher, but out of a pitcher that has a lead and can go out, just throw strikes and attack. And that's exactly what they were able to do. And then the bullpen comes in. TJ McFarland, Kevin Ginkle, Yoan Lopez, they combined for 5 innings, 1 earned run, and that was end of the ball game. Game was out of reach. You're starting to see, I think, the bullpen start to stabilize a little bit. For as bad as it was a couple of weeks ago, we've seen Archie Bradley be rock solid. Yoan Lopez has been really good. McFarland's starting, I think, to find himself a little bit and work out of some tough situations and get out of that. Chafin, I feel like, has been really good kind of throughout the year. And this is something that I think looking at this team going into the year, we didn't think that the Diamondbacks offense was going to be as good as it was. And I thought that the bullpen was going to be the strength of that team. And so far that has been kind of flipped. But you're starting to see the bullpen, develop. Obviously, with Zach Greinke now no longer in this rotation, Mike Leake hasn't really gone deep in a ball game quite yet. Zach Gallen, five innings last in his first start, four innings in his second. You need these bullpen guys to be able to shorten the game, and that's what they've been able to do. And it's really nice to play downhill, as Torrey Lovello says, get that early lead and go off. And this is going to be just a very interesting 6 weeks, the remainder, with really each given day. I feel like it's kind of, all right, Diamondbacks are in the mix. Diamondbacks might not be. I'm not sure. You know, they're right on that line at 61 and 59. They're 2.5 games out of that second wild card. But they're playing so many of these teams coming up that they are fighting for. St. Louis right now with the second wild card. They end the year with St. Louis. They're going to play the Brewers. They're going to play the Mets. The Giants are, a game behind them. They're going to play them. Cincinnati, San Diego, Colorado. You just go down the list, and it seems like just a bunch of teams right in this tier of, not quite full-fledged playoff team, but definitely in the hunt. And the Diamondbacks are facing really all of them. So, aside from, I think, the Phillies, who they just played in two separate series, they're going to be seeing a lot of those teams. So it's going to be, I think, a wild ride. The starting pitching is still getting settled with the new rotation and that sort of thing. But if the lineup continues to churn out runs like they have, and I think that the coaching staff needs to be commended for the way the offense is now hitting, because the first few years with Torrey Lovello, it was always kind of around mid-season you would start to see some cracks in the lineup, and the runs weren't quite coming across. In year one, they got J.D. Martinez, and that was the great equalizer because he was Thanos out there, just world-beating. Year two, they weren't able to get that big acquisition at the trade deadline, and then they fell off and narrowly missed the postseason. That's not been an issue for this team. They've scored runs. They're plus 75 right now in run differential. That is insane for a team that had A.J. Pollock walk away, Paul Goldschmidt get traded, Jake Lamb out for much of the year. This team has really stepped up nicely. I think leading the way, Ketel Marte, Eduardo Escobar, David Peralta. Those are the guys, I think, that have really led the charge. But, Nick Ahmed had a great game last night, and I think that also goes into that. Shifting gears briefly to... There's a situation going on with the Dallas Cowboys right now. They have three pretty darn good players, and three need to get paid. And they're figuring out how that's all going to work out. Dak Prescott, Ezekiel Elliott, Amari Cooper, all on the verge of new contracts. Ezekiel Elliott currently sitting out, was in Cabo. I'm not sure if he still is. But Jerry Jones had an analogy to explain that he's been through this before, not to worry about these contract negotiations, and that it'll all work out. So this comes from John Machota, and a writer for The Athletic, Dallas Cowboys. Here's the quote. Picture you were a driver of a car, and you had a wreck, and your hand was almost severed off, but you didn't understand your anatomy. You look down, you're spurting blood, you open the door and run to the woods and either die bleeding to death or shock. The educated man looks down, knows his anatomy, squeezes and knows his best chances is to wait and help. That's because he's been there a lot and done that. So I'm squeezing and waiting for help. What? I don't even know where to begin. One, just a weird analogy to begin with. But the wise man who has waited for help, that's because he's been there a lot and done that. So he's been in multiple auto wrecks and almost severed his hand multiple times. He shouldn't be behind the wheel. I am so confused by this, and I'm going to spend much of the rest of my day after the show probably just contemplating this way more than I should. But I'm in... I had to experience this, so I'm letting everyone else experience this.
Straight up, it kind of freaked me out. That was a little extra.
Out of left field, right? Like, I woke up this morning, like, was scrolling through Twitter, and was like, oh, an analogy. Like, usually, you know, when people are trying to, you know, explain contract negotiations, it's usually pretty weird. But a car accident, doesn't know their anatomy, spurting blood. I don't know.
Well, like, okay, first of all, the entire first part was weird. Mm-hmm. I was like, there's no other analogy. Okay, never mind. But the last part was the weirdest to me, is I was waiting for something to kind of bring it all together, and he was like, I'm just going to sit here and wait for help. And I'm like, okay, so what help is Jerry Jones looking for and specific for
right.
Zeke and Dak? I like, what, like, the arm doesn't fix itself.
No.
So you're not expecting Dak or Zeke to figure out themselves.
I feel like in this scenario, this is like Jason Garrett saying that, and then Jerry Jones is the help that comes. And
exactly.
Like, here, we'll bankroll all this.
Yes. If Jerry Jones is the one who needs help, I'm concerned
I'm
for the Cowboys.
Sure what's going on here?
I'm concerned for Jerry's health at this point.
Is his arm okay?
How many accidents has he been in?
That is true. Has anyone seen his hand recently? I'll just say you should sign Amari Cooper. You used a first-round pick on him, and he's a pretty darn good wide receiver. So I'd go Dak and Amari, just saying. Coming up next, we're going to talk more NFL. Talk about the Cardinals. Going to make my own comparison. It has nothing to do with horrible accidents or severed hands, but I don't know if Cardinals fans are going to like it. That's coming up next on the Brad Sessmatt Show. We are a day away from game number 2 of the preseason for the Arizona Cardinals. They are taking on the Raiders. Will be interesting to see what the next episode of Hard Knocks looks like you know, the Cardinals' perspective and what's the focus with that. But saw news that Andrew Luck was going through another injury issue. It looked like it was a strained calf. And now it's being described as a high ankle issue. Week 1 status is in doubt. He's had a lot of health issues. 36 miss games in his career so far. And this got me thinking about the Arizona Cardinals and what the Colts have looked like in previous years with Andrew Luck. Uber talented. He's had his fair share of injuries, and I'm going to try to avoid that portion of it because you can't predict that side of things. But when you looked at the Colts, when they drafted him, a playoff appearance very early on in his career, it seemed like the Colts were bouncing back. It was going to be, you know, the extension of the Peyton Manning Colts after a Curtis Painter year that was really rough, where they were able to get the number one pick and draft Andrew Luck. But I feel like overall, last year made the playoffs, really turned things around, drafted incredibly well. But the years prior, that group really underachieved under the Andrew Luck regime. That got me thinking about the Arizona Cardinals. The Cardinals have what should be a game-changing quarterback in Kyler Murray. A very special talent, could turn the NFL on its head, you know, can run, can pass. And, you know, usually these dual-threat guys you hear about, they're running ability first. But you, with Murray, it seems like you hear first about his accuracy. So that's usually a pretty good indicator that he's going to be a pretty darn good quarterback. What has me concerned, and I know that there are a lot of people very excited about the Cardinals and what they could be, but what has me concerned is this is a year removed from a 3-13 season, and yes, they added their quarterback of the future. They added some depth in the wide receiver room, but that felt like what the Colts did time and time again to try to help Andrew Luck. But they didn't necessarily address the offensive line. They didn't necessarily address the defensive line. Now, I think that the Cardinals have made that effort. They've tried to bring in guys. You know, they've added Marcus Gilbert. They've added Sweezy. You know, Justin Pugh from, 2 off seasons ago. My concern with the offensive line right now is the depth. and that a lot of these guys do have an injury history, and Pugh has already missed a little bit of time. They are making it sound like it's not going to be a huge deal. But if we learned anything from last year, it's you can't have too many good offensive linemen. And I'm not sure if the Cardinals have been able to bring in enough guys to do that. And on the other end, the defensive line, for the most part, really got gashed a lot last year, especially in the run game. I know it's the preseason, but it seemed like we saw more of that. And you have Darius Filon cut, Robert Kendiche cut. You have multiple guys that are now getting cut on the defensive side of the football, specifically on that defensive line, that I don't know where the depth is with that. And they've done a good job, I think, addressing the linebacker situation, bringing in Suggs, bringing in Jordan Hicks. I think that will be much improved. But getting that pass rush and getting that run-stopping ability along the defensive line, I'm not sure if it's there. So when I saw this news with the Indianapolis Colts, it was like uber-talented quarterback. But a couple years ago, that roster was not where it needs to be. I still feel like it's still kind of there. So that's why I'm pumping the brakes on the Cardinals, big-time predictions, uber-improved, that sort of thing. I think the quarterback play will be improved a lot. I think the wide receivers will be pretty good, although a lot of them are very young, aside from Larry Fitzgerald. Even Christian Kirk only logged about half a season due to injury, and it's a lot of rookies. And it's a system that will cater to these guys, but still a lot of youth there. And then on the defensive side of the ball, you now have Zach Allen as a starter along the defensive end defensive line. Boston College rookie Byron Murphy is going to log a lot of time as a rookie. I think that these are two very capable rookies, but it's kind of one of those things you want your young guys to play as a luxury, not as a necessity. And this feels more and more like there is a necessity. So I'm just going to wait and see kind of how this goes. I think that the offense will look much better. It will be much more exciting. But I'm not really sure if that's going to equate to wins quite yet. And I think that the front office also knows that, because I think they know that this is a multi-year deal, getting things built up. But we'll just be interesting to see how they use that waiver pick or that waiver position. They're number one. They get first hack at guys that get waived, who they bring in, who they don't, and if they can continue to make deals and add depth. Because right now I feel like as guys are continuing to get cut for issues off the field, it's just hurting the team more and more, and especially at that depth position. So coming up next, we have Zach Gallen, a new Arizona Diamondbacks pitcher, just came off his second start against the Rockies. It was a win. We're going to talk to him about making that transition to his new club. Welcome back to the Brad Sesmatt Show. I am Jordan Hamm filling in for the big guy. Zach Gallen will be joining us here in just a second. Before we get to him, I was reading through a way too early prediction of the top 20 free agents in MLB, and who could be available this offseason and who the targets could be. Highlights, what, Garrett Cole, Anthony Rendon, Ryu, Madison Bumgarner. And usually this was a list that the Diamondbacks were never on in terms of teams expected to bid, just because they had so much money tied up, not only in A.J. Pollock, Paul Goldschmidt, Pat Corbin, but that Zach Greinke deal really handcuffed them, where they had to get creative. And we've talked about this plenty before. Marcell Ozuna coming in at number six. And the teams expected to bid, Diamondbacks among that. And I think that just kind of speaks to what the Diamondbacks were able to accomplish on trade deadline day. Moving Zach Greinke, getting plenty of talent back, but also making that Zach Gallen trade. And moving on from Jazz Chisholm, top player in the farm system, but bringing in a quality pitcher who's two starts in, has done very well in nine starts this year, about a 2.55 ERA. But when you look at Ozuna, he's having a bit of a bounce back year. Struggled last year, had a shoulder injury, slashing 255, 334, 509, 22 home runs, 65 RBI, and 11 stolen bases, which is a career high in just 87 games. So to see that the Diamondbacks are now on these types of lists, I know this is – look, guys, I know it's August 14th, and we are still needing to focus on what's going on with the team currently, but to see the future kind of just things opening up a little bit, I think that's certainly a good sign to kind of see where they're going and the flexibility that the front office is going to have to, evaluate and acquire talent outside of trading and doing free agency. So with that, we're going to recap kind of where the Diamondbacks have been. Two wins so far against the Rockies, going for the sweep today. And we are now joined by Zach Gallen, the new starting pitcher, one of the many new additions from trade deadline day. Gallen was traded from Miami to Arizona, just wrapped up his second start with the club. Zach, thanks so much for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
So just a broad question to start, just kind of how has the past 2 weeks been for you, getting traded from Miami to Arizona, making a big transition, coming cross country, but also having to perform on the mound?
They've been kind of hectic, but thankfully they've kind of slowed down. I've kind of been able to settle in so far, but I'm excited to be here, so it's been fun.
Coming off your second start yesterday with the Rockies, your first time facing them, I imagine with the NL West, you're going to be facing some teams that you haven't yet quite before. How would you assess kind of how you've done these first two starts with the Diamondbacks?
I think they've been pretty good so far. You got to take your outings at Coors Field kind of with a grain of salt, so I won't look into it too much or, kind of change anything, but I think the first two have gone pretty well.
I read that you're really into the preparation side of things and looking into the, kind of the deeper analytics and that sort of thing. I know the Diamondbacks have also embraced that. In terms of the information and the research they've been able to provide you so far, how has that compared to other clubs that you've played for coming up?
Yeah, it's a little bit different. I mean, I think at the same time, though, each team is trying to get across the same point. The way they present it to you might be a little bit different, but, Miami, I thought, did a great job, with their analytics and information, stuff like that. So it was kind of a easy transition here, a little bit different style, but, at the same time, I feel like any information you get is, helps you out on the mound, and I try to embrace that.
Without getting into too much of the nuts and bolts of your game plan, what are you really trying to focus on when you're doing that research, a couple days before your start?
So here Dan Herron's our pitching strategist, so he kind of comes up with a plan. I trust, he's played in the big leagues for a long time, so I trust his eyes, trust the information that, the other analytic guys give me. But I try and simplify it more so than anything. I go through and write down some sequences I think that would play best when I'm out there and just kind of write those down. Not, looking too much to the numbers, more so just how I think certain pitches play to guys' swings. And I think that's been the biggest thing for me so far.
Talking to Zach Gallen, Arizona Diamondbacks pitcher. I saw that on Baseball Reference it lists your nickname as the Milkman. With a last name like Gallen, I can kind of see the connection. But where did you first hear that nickname?
I think that started somewhere in college. I would imagine, I probably played off my last name, Gallon of Milk kind of deal. I think a reporter had come up with it. That's probably the first place that I saw it. I think it's some sort of headline of something like the Milkman always delivers or something. I don't know. It's kind of not necessarily stuck, but I'm surprised that it's kind of been around this long. But, it is what it is.
My last name is Ham, so I've grown up with the plenty of those nicknames as well, from Honey Baked to Ham and Cheese everything in between. So when you look at kind of the club with the Diamondbacks, first in the league in defensive runs saved, what's it like just getting to, I know it's a very small sample size, but getting to step on the mound and, having that sort of defense behind you, it's got to help, knowing you can make some pitches and let some balls get put in play.
Absolutely, yeah. The biggest thing is, as a pitcher, you got to be efficient to go deep in the game. So to know you have a defense behind you that's best in the league and, saving runs, is huge. It kind of takes, you know, the weight off your shoulders. You know, you want to go out there and just attack the zone, keep the pace going, and it's definitely huge for a pitcher to know that it's behind you.
Start number one with the Diamondbacks, you pitched to Carson Kelly. Start number two was to Alex Avila. What are you trying to go over with them to get on the same page, you know, when you're a midseason acquisition and trying to, you know, get, like I said, on the same page in just a matter of days while they're going to be catching you?
Yeah, I think, you know, it's a little different. You know, you're switching over in the middle of the season. So Carson kind of had an idea, but we talked about it, and he said, you know, your repertoire has kind of evolved. So I think he meant that in a good way. So I think it's good for them, you know, especially Carson. He was used to, you know, me being mostly fastball cutter, and now when he calls a game, he's got a couple of different pitches to work with. I think it just takes, you know, a couple outings. Me going out there necessarily, you know, calling my game the first couple of times, them kind of having an idea of what I like to do. And then after that, both of these catchers are unbelievably smart. You know, Alex has played in the big leagues for a long time, and Carson's, you know, as bright as they come. So you can't imagine it's going to take them many outings to kind of have an idea of what I like to do.
It was a busy trade deadline day for the Arizona Diamondbacks, not only bringing you over, but quite a few prospects in the Zach Greinke trade. One of them was your college teammate, J.B. Bukauskas. Just what's it like getting to, you know, potentially reunite with him at the big league level eventually? And do you have any stories from the college days about, you know, him?
It's awesome. He texted me. I don't know how much longer after it happened, but I think very soon, right as the kind of the whole thing, I was getting traded. At the time, I was unsure, like not, you know, really knowing what to expect. It never happened in the middle of the season before in terms of being traded. But, yeah, no, I was pumped to hear that. It was kind of almost like I was just relieved, you know, to see, have a familiar face, especially in spring training, you know, and hopefully, you know, soon in the big leagues for him. But, yeah, I don't know if I necessarily have any stories that I could share publicly, but you know, we had a good time. The first year was kind of, you know, JB's a quiet kid, so we didn't necessarily gel together, but after, you know, our first year and spending a lot of time together in the starting rotation, we got to know each other pretty well, and you know, I consider him one of my closer friends. We lived together in spring training this past year, so it'll be fun to see him again, and I'm excited.
Zach, we appreciate the time and good luck the rest of the way.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
That is Zach Gallen of the Arizona Diamondbacks. Just wrapped up start number two. Didn't get the win, but pitched the team to a win with four innings, giving up just two earned runs. Yeah, kind of what we've seen out of him the first couple of games, five innings, I believe five and a third and four. But when he was with Miami, he showed multiple times he could go seven innings, but they're keeping him right around that 95, topping out at about 105 pitches. So looking forward to seeing what he can do, not only the rest of the way this year, but in following years as well, and kind of how they shape this rotation. Quite a few guys that will have contract control of for the next couple of years. Coming up next, we have Brad Sesmatt sitting down with Ralph Amsden with Chili from the Arizona Varsity Crew. It will be nothing if not interesting. So make sure to keep it here and check that out coming up next on the Brad Sesmatt Show.
And this week on the Audibles crew, we decided to bring in the heavyweights from Arizona Varsity. Good job, as always, that they do. Actually, great job. We have Ralph, we have Chili in studio. Guys, it is season opening time. School is back in play. And with that as the backdrop, I need a team. Give me a team, either one of you, that is going to shock the world, surprise everybody with how good they're going to be this year.
Have you heard anybody say that Desert Vista could compete for the Open Division Championship?
You.
I'm going to say that they
plant
could
the flag.
Compete. They could compete. They lost a couple of really, really good players last year, like Brett Johnson, but Park Navarro has looked as good as anybody that I've seen as a 6A quarterback. I think that they are as blessed at running back as you can possibly be. And they've got an experienced coaching staff, and that continuity is really, really important. I'm not saying that Chandler is going to take a step back, but we've seen how much continuity matters, and Chandler has a first-year head coach. We don't know a ton about them, and they're developing a new quarterback. If there has ever been a time for somebody to sneak in that has a ton of experience on their team, it could be Desert Vista.
Could. You're soft selling Chandler. Come on, get out of here.
Okay.
Chili?
I love the Desert Vista pick. I mean, last year I picked Arcadia. Last year I picked Highland. So my track record is pretty good because nobody saw those teams doing the things that they did. This year I like Marcos to kind of, you know, get to the 500 level as they're building their program. But
really,
that's
a good one.
Yeah, no, I think
that
Marcos
there.
Is on their way. I love what Coach Eric Lauer is doing over there. Yakin, the dream Bayless. I think that as a running back, like he's just going to shock everybody. And he gets a good opportunity to go against some of these tough teams like the Saguaros, like the Arcadias that are hungry still, like the Setons that are still trying to come up and build with Coach Walheim. So I think that, you know, Marcos is going to kind of turn that proverbial corner and get to 500. But that would not be like my biggest surprise pick.
All right.
I kind of think Desert Ridge is going to make some noise. I think they're revamping that offense. I love what Hathcock is doing. And Stone Cold at quarterback, I think he's poised to throw for somewhere around 3,500, 4,000
yards. 3,500
yards. At Desert Ridge, it's going to be crazy. I mean, I don't remember the last time that they had a quarterback do that.
Hey, they were the first to throw for 3,000 yards. People forget. People forget that they were the first to be out there throwing for 3,000 yards.
They were also the first to make a 2,000-yard rusher cool, and they had the Machine Morrison running all those plays for them. But, man, I love what Hathcock is doing over there. I love those wide receivers, Chino and Aiden Lee. I think that they're really, really special. So, I don't know. I think that I could see that team getting to, like, 9 wins.
More wins, Desert Ridge or Red Mountain?
Don't they open
right now,
against each other?
Right now, off the top, I really got to say Desert Ridge because there's a lot of questions at quarterback.
Ooh.
There's a lot of questions at quarterback for Red Mountain, and I need some of those settled. Is it going to be the freshman Daniels? Is it going to get all 10 games? Is it going to be Borum, the super athlete that they have over there that played a lot of linebacker or safety for them last year? Or is it going to be Svoboda, who is so talented but, you know, is in a rotation?
First-year coach who's under the gun.
First-year coach who is under the gun. I got to say, anybody who works in the Mesa School District, we've seen so much turnover out there. And people don't realize. You look at Centennial, right? Centennial, I think Richard Taylor's one win away from having 250 career wins at Centennial High School.
25 years, right?
And he didn't get a playoff win until his 12th year on the job. Yet in Mesa, if you can't perform right away, they look for someone else to move on. And so if you're going to see any coaching turbulence or turnover that's coming a little bit earlier than it should, I'd look to that district.
Man, I got to say the guy over at Mesquite Hare, man, that is a tough situation to be in. Super talented quarterback Ty Thompson, but you are in one of the toughest regions in the 4A. You got Saguaro, you got that hungry Seton team, you got Marcos coming up, Arcadia, like it's gonna be – really, really hard over there.
You think at Mesquite, someone could step down from being the athletic director and then be pushed out as head coach?
No, I mean, but you're talking about being under the gun.
Okay.
I think that that's smart. I don't think that he's going to get pushed out.
They're not going to lose their job.
No,
it's
no,
just,
no, no, no.
We're not talking about that.
Man, under the gun.
Look at you. It's high school coaches.
Hey.
Come on.
Whoa. I'm just making sure we're all on the same page. We're pro coaches keeping their job.
No, I want him to keep his job. I'm just saying, it's a really, really hard situation for him to go into where they were having a little bit of success last year with Ty Thompson and this crew, and then all of a sudden, new coach.
Yeah.
You know, if he struggles, like.
How many wins is Jason Jewell going to have at Brophy?
I put him at 6 easy. Give me 6.
Six
wins.
I think 6 including playoffs.
Yeah.
Including playoffs. I think that they could probably sneak a win in the playoffs. The 6A playoffs are going to be interesting anyway because you probably have 5 or 6 teams that are sub-500. Not 500, sub-500 sneaking into the playoffs. And so that'll be watered down a little bit. And I believe in Jason Jewell. I think that by the end of the season, he can have the momentum built up and they can probably make it to at least the second round.
Nobody has more college connections than Jason Jewell. I mean, I would put him on that tier of coaches that, like, there isn't a program that he can't get to. So Brophy, as soon as they hired him, became a destination spot. It became a destination spot. They brought Kurt Warner. They brought a Hall of Fame quarterback to run their offense. I just think that, you know, 6 wins is almost underselling his ability to coach.
Pinnacle, Chaparral, more victories.
I'm going to take Pinnacle. I think they have a little bit of an easier schedule, minus the Eastside Catholic game. They get by Perry. I think this is a team that we're looking at that goes 9-1.
I think that momentum is important when you look at that question. And I think that Chaparral is probably going to have an easier time with Hamilton than Pinnacle is with Perry. And so I think earlier in the season, Chaparral will start out a lot hotter. But then Chaparral runs into a little bit tougher of an in-region schedule than I think Pinnacle does.
Who has more talent than South Point Catholic? How many other schools?
Saguaro.
and how many others?
I definitely take Saguaro.
Okay, so one other team. Like, Sal Point is sitting out there. You could make the argument one of the most talented teams is in Tucson this year.
They got Lathan. Are we talking about before or after the transfers are eligible to play?
Today.
Today? So I just got to find a team that has more than B2K, Fina, Lathan, Chang.
Chandler High School. I'll just go out and say it. Chandler High School and Saguaro.
Centennial.
Chandler High School and Saguaro have more talent on their rosters than I would have been able to imagine 5-10 years ago.
Where'd you go to high school?
I went to Chandler.
Plant the flag?
I do not.
What's wrong with Chandler? What's your question with Chandler?
My question with Chandler, and I know that I'm going to get some text messages after this airs, my big question with Chandler is that they are going from a 3-time state champion quarterback, maybe the best to ever do it, to Mikey Keene.
Wow.
And Mikey Keene is very talented. He's somebody who can throw on the run. You look at the way the Denver Broncos used Jake Plummer and they were able to have success with him when the Arizona Cardinals couldn't. That's how Chandler is going to employ Mikey Keene. They're going to roll him out. They've got running backs everywhere. They've got a fantastic offensive line. This is built for him to succeed, but he still has to go out there and do it. And we don't have a ton of film on him. So it's literally a question. Can he do it? And he's trying to fill the biggest quarterback shoes that have ever been filled as far as a 3-time champion. We don't have those in Arizona. And so that's my question. I think it's a legitimate question to have, and I fully expect him to answer it.
Is he an apologist for Chandler?
I mean, I think he's trying
to... Or is he a realist?
Running C-Town Rivals, I think that he's trying to, save a little face and, not trying to, punch his heavyweight in the mouth when he's the promoter. So,
The promoter!
If you think about the origin story of, Ralph and media, it's C-Town Rivals.
Yeah.
He built this very, very cool website with 6 schools, the head of them being Chandler and Hamilton. So you cannot punch your heavyweight in the mouth when
you
are
the hand that feeds you.
Oh, absolutely not.
You're turning red.
Well, see, this is to show my loyalty to some other schools like Chaparral and people who wear those colors. No, I think that... Chandler has won 4 of the last 5 championships. We're forced to talk about the teams that are good, and a lot of them happen to be in the Chandler school district.
Is Hamilton closing the gap on Chandler?
No.
Yes. Yes.
Hamilton needs to close the gap on not giving up 50 points a game.
Yes.
This is a team
also
that,
true.
This is a team that's been giving up more points in region than they would give up over a 2-season period when they were at their absolute height. And they still have the amount of talent that they used to.
Sometimes
they're still talented.
Sometimes you cannot get closer to your opponent until you get beat down more by your opponent. Hey, like Captain America, I could do this all day. I could do this all day. Hamilton will take these whippings year in and year out, and Nick Arve, Brendan Rice, all these kids, they'll stay there at Hamilton, and they'll get right back up, and they'll say, you know what? We're going to come back for another one.
It's what Brett Hundley used to do.
Let's see if you can do it again.
Brett Hundley used to get punched in the mouth.
Let's find out if you can do it again.
Chandler couldn't beat Hamilton then.
Hamilton arguably might have one of the most talented class of 2023s in the state. You couldn't say that last year or the year before.
Culture, though. You have to build up a winning culture. Brett Hundley never went from the class of
2023. You start with these freshmen. Cole Martin is one of the nastiest freshmen are going to see in the state.
He's good, but you talk about other teams that sometimes you got to get down and out before you come back. How many of those teams went 4-10 over a 14-game period? It doesn't happen. You have to build up that culture. Hamilton is going to have to make me a believer this year.
Is Saguaro going to make the 7?
The 8?
The 8?
Yes.
No.
Yes.
The power 7, but the 8 teams.
Yes.
No. No, you're asking.
How do you say that Saguaro is not going to make it? Because that's all I hear about is how great Saguaro is.
The crown jewel of Jason Mon's Infinity Gauntlet is going to be this 7th ring that he gets by beating all the best teams in the state.
Oh, so you're calling it now.
Guaranteed that they are going to get into the 8.
And win?
They're guaranteed they're going to get into the 8. As far as winning, I mean, I think that this will be the crown jewel. If he get, Hey, if he gets in the eight, it's going to be a problem.
How do you see them not getting in? Ready.
I don't have any faith in the formula. This is the same.
So this is a conspiracy. This is grassy knoll theory on your part.
No. It's grassy knoll theory on his part. No. He believes that they'll do whatever it takes to make sure that Saguaro's included.
What they don't want is they do not want one bit.
Who's they?
Oh, they.
They.
They. Who's they? Like DJ Khaled taught us who they was.
Yeah.
You know, they do not want Saguaro to be playing in a 4A like tournament with the best secondary in the country, one of the most talented running backs in Israel Benjamin, one of the most talented wide receivers in Matt Polk, one of the most talented Swiss Army knife players in Will Schaefer. They do not want to see that.
So what you're
just
telling
like they
me is
do not want to see Chandler in some open 6A tournament.
So what you're telling us is with the season starting, it's already set. This is like the frozen ball for the lottery. It's already set. You believe
that. Saguaro, Chandler, Centennial are all in.
I don't think so. I mean, we're looking right now at the first year of an AIA
formula. This isn't a guess.
They
got reservations.
It's the first year of an AIA.
Buses are reserved.
The last time the AIA.
Hotel rooms.
The last time the AIA had a first year formula, it placed McClintock in 6A, and they had to go back and fix that. We don't know how this is going to work out. If Glendale goes 10-0, like they almost did last year, what if a team like Glendale ends up in? Because we just don't know how this formula is going to work. You're asking me to put my faith in a system that I have seen be way too wonky in the past, and I can't do that. Does Saguaro deserve to be one of the top eight teams in the state? Are they one of the top eight? Are they one of the top three most talented teams? Of course, they should be there. They should get in. But you're asking me to place my faith in a formula that I don't have any faith in.
Okay, so when you guys go out to games this year, These two, okay? Ralph and Chili, Arizona Varsity. Five players that people need to go see this year. They may not be the parents or tied to a school, but if you guys are into football and that these are kids that you're going to want to see in high school because they may go on to college, they may not. Let's throw some names. Five names. Who do you have?
Well, first I'm going to start with Chuba Purdy because he is at maybe the most entertaining athlete in the entire state. So that's my number one.
Man, okay, so you went big. Dang,
I thought. You nervous?
No, I mean, I didn't know that.
Give me five.
I just didn't know that we were going to take, like, all the biggest kids that, like, everybody's already seen, because I was going to throw out somebody like Carlos Fernandez.
Do it.
Which I know that nobody's going to go take a
look
at.
Where is he?
Over there at La Jolla. He's this very, very talented two-way player, wide receiver, defensive back. He can do so many things, but unfortunately, nobody's going to really take the time to go out to La Jolla and cover a full game.
Go out to La Jolla.
Go to La Jolla.
Go out there and see.
Arnell Christian is another one, a running back from Tolleson. Tolleson's also an up-and-coming program who I probably should have picked to be like my surprise team because I absolutely love what they're doing over there. But Arnell Christian, somebody that nobody's going to get to see except for that Hamilton game when he matches up with them, but a phenomenally talented running back, can do almost anything out of the backfield and deserves to be getting some more media attention. And if that helps in recruiting, fantastic. So now I'm up two. Who else you got?
I would take away players in general, and I'd say if there's two schools that you want to go see this year where you're going to see some talent and you're going to be able to tell people that you saw talent
don't
before
say
anybody
Chandler.
Else. No, I'm not going to say Chandler.
Don't say Saguaro.
I'm going to say Yuma Catholic, and I think that Prescott has a pretty good team.
Oh, my
and
God, so, that kid Aaron Green, there's a tight end that Ralph told
Aaron
me about.
Aaron Green, he's like 6'5", 230, went
legit.
To a showcase. And ended up walking away with three or four offers. And so, I mean, and you got a 5,000-yard passer out at UMass Catholic. You can't go wrong there.
Just got to make the drive.
Just got to make the drive. Sometimes they'll come up. I think they might play Valley Christian, which will give you a chance to see Justin Stinson. So it's not very often that Valley Christian has a D1 athlete, and they do in their defensive backfield. And so, you know, that's a really, really big deal for them. You kill two birds with one stone there.
No, absolutely.
Chili Ralph. Ralph Chili. Arizona Varsity in studio. Guys, thanks.